Welcome to C-Suite Radio.
It's time for another edition of the Brett Allen Show.
It's go time, you and me.
Join us weekly for the latest pop culture interviews from your favorite TV shows, movies, comedians, and so much more.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie to you, it felt good.
Plus, you never know who will drop by.
What happened here was a miracle.
Now, here is your host.
I said throw down, boy.
Welcome to the nice main event.
Brett Allen.
Today on the show, we're talking with comedian, podcaster, writer Chris Martin, and his bio, as it says, not to be confused with the singer from Coldplay. Does that happen a lot? Like, for real?
It happens a lot on the internet, bizarrely, despite my social media, me holding a pic. Maybe I don't have any, but I say brackets, not in Coldplay, yet still people think we're British and... I don't think we look the same, but turns out to certain parts of the world, we look the same.
I so, mean, I could see the resemblance, but the funny thing is like when your publicist pitched you and I was like, oh yeah, I know Chris, he's great. He wrote for James Corden. He's done a lot of great things. I was excited to talk to you. So but it's funny. They included that not to be confused with Chris Martin from Cold.
You just don't know. Do you know what? I keep getting invited to like random events in LA. One of them, I went to like the opening of a hotel and got a free meal. And I was like, I wonder if they think I'm in, but then I got invited again. So I was like, well, maybe they, I don't know. I'm not in any way famous, but I'm like, I could be nominated for an award for something I've done, like for this album, and I would still go to the award show and assume they invited me by accident.
That's funny. Well, the recent album that came out was Above Ground Comedian, yeah, which is really funny, and it released on the 23rd of February.
Yes.
And it's your full-length sophomore comedy album, so you had done one before.
Yes.
It's available for people to stream everywhere. And about a 2-year difference between the two. So it's been out for a little while. What has the response been from fans? What do people have to say? Because, I mean, putting out an album is one thing, but two albums is a really big deal.
Oh, thanks. The first one was a weird one because it was in the pandemic and it was kind of patched together like stand-up bits and kind of made it one continuous thing. But the second one was more of we weren't in the pandemic anymore. And so I was like, oh, cool, let's go and actually record this as a piece. And yeah, people have been very nice. People have been very positive about it. It's some people are surprised it's clean. It's like basically I don't think I swear in the whole thing. And I don't really think so.
If I remember correctly, I mean, I listened to this a while ago, but yeah, I mean, I don't know why that's so terribly surprising because you don't have, it's not a dig on anybody, but like you can be funny and it still works.
Yeah, it's funny. Definitely like mums, old people, more old people than I realized like it if you don't swear. It's like, not that I'm trying to corner the boomer market, but people are like, I liked you because you didn't swear. I'm like, did you like it because it made you think about stuff in a different way? And they're like, it's because you didn't swear. But yeah, I didn't even realize. I think in America, it's a bigger deal than the UK to not swear. I think because there's more religious maybe in this country, so people appreciate you not swearing. But the only reason I do it is for literally no reason. Sometimes you just do something because you heard something back in the day and you just haven't changed. Someone just told me once, if you put a joke has swearing in it, it isn't finished yet, which I don't actually agree with because sometimes some of my favorite comedians swear, but all the time. But I think I just like the challenge of it. I'm like, can I make this work without a swear word? And actually in the album, there's one joke that before I recorded it, I had the F word in it. Because I don't know why I could swear on here, couldn't I? But I decided.
Yeah, you're
to.
Fine.
I feel like I shouldn't though. Now I've said this whole thing, but I definitely do swear in real life. But then it was like the rhythm of it saying effing whatever, like made it funnier. No, it was F it. I said F it let's try magic. I think it's a joke about manifesting. And then in the recording, I tried it a couple of times without saying F it, like a version of it. And then I said, screw it on the, when we recorded, and it actually got a really good laugh, but weirdly it hadn't always got such a good laugh. So I don't know. Sometimes the joke is better with a swear word, but if you can get the intention of the swear word without swearing, that's a nice sweet spot.
Yeah, no, I mean, either way is fine. I think personally, I just enjoy comedy. So Chris, let me ask your style when you write and get an hour together, put it out on album form or whatever the case might be. Is your process to immediately shelve that hour and start on new stuff? What do you do? Do you sprinkle them in while you're doing new material, depending on your audience?
Yeah, I think it just varied. Like, so I recorded it in August and it came out in February. So that gave me like, I think in my head, I was like, I didn't know exactly when we were going to release it, but I knew I'd have a few months, but it was a nice motivation to be like, all right, I need to be mindful to be coming up with new stuff, because people, I think, will still laugh. You can have like a few, like even if they had like, I don't know, like 15, 20 minutes on stage, I may have had like one joke from the album just to like kick things off. Cause sometimes it's, you know, in a shorter set, it's more established. Some of the stuff you're a bit more used to, like confident, that will be a good way to start the set. But yeah, generally I've been trying since I recorded it to like just force myself to do new stuff. And then I was like, none of this is as good as the album. I was like, I don't have anything good enough. But then I did like a set like a few weeks ago, and I had like 40 minutes of new stuff. So it's weird. It surprises you, because you, I think you're always comparing it to the album, like quality wise, but ultimately the album was some of the stuff I've been working on for a year or two. So you're just going to get it tighter. But I was happy that I have definitely, I think, at least half an hour of pretty solid new stuff. And it would be good to, I used to do a whole new hour every year because of Edinburgh Festival, basically. So it was a good discipline. I did 5 hours in a row. So I think I'm just used to that. Once it's recorded or it's gone to a festival, then time to think of the new stuff. And I'm more excited by the new stuff because I haven't said it as much.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, some people say they've been telling these jokes, so to speak, for like 10 years, and then they record it, put it out. And it's almost like therapeutic, maybe, in some ways, to do something new. But also know that you have your bench if you need to go to it while you're working on new stuff. Which, I mean, that's what I think what you do is so fascinating, is it's just such an ever-fluctuating, fluid art form, because it's never the same. Like each night, let's say you're playing a club on a weekend, sold out shows, every night's going to be different. And that's what I think makes comedy personally so experimental and so fun.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was, what was I doing this? I did somewhere on, where was I on Friday? It was Friday. I was closing a show in Santa Monica. And then on Saturday, I was opening a show. So even that, you're like different energies. Like at the show I closed, I'd loads of great comics had gone on before me. And then I probably did a story that was like too long for the, because I'd watched a lot of comedy. I was like, maybe I was like, that's a good story. But I feel like they'd seen so much comedy that it was like too, like it was not the right choice for that crowd. And then on Saturday, I was doing quite a rowdy show in Palmsdale. Never been there before. It's just like an hour away from Los Angeles. And it was really fun. It was like, they were drunk and then I, quite an alpha crowd, I guess. And then I managed to make it work, but I was in my head going, some of the people I like, some of the stuff I've basically got like a five to 10 minute routine about how much I like it when muscly big men like me. And it's like my favorite thing is to make a big muscly guy befriend me. Anyway, and then like I could tell half a crowd were really into it. And then there was a lot of these kind of very alpha straight guys who I think like, I want to hear this on a Saturday. But I found that personally quite amusing to play with that. So
yeah, I imagine that would probably engage you in a way to dig in deep and really have some fun, I would think.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. That's what's fun about it. You're right. Every crowd's different. Not everything hits the same to every audience, but if you can make everyone, that's why you got to kind of be like, this is what I'm doing. as much as you can. And then I'm trying to kind of convince as many of you guys to join me in enjoying this. It doesn't always, you don't always get you're never going to get everyone to enjoy it, but as many as you can is always a nice place to be.
Yes. So I want to mention the fact that you wrote for The Late Late Show. How long did you write for that show?
I wrote for, I was on the last season of the show.
Okay. So as the show's leaving, did you get hired by James? How did that process work?
It's kind of cool. They want, you have to write a packet, like,
right.
Like an example, like a, I can't remember, it wasn't too like dense a packet. Sometimes for those shows, they want you to write pages and pages. This was like half a page, one page or something of monologue jokes. And then you had to just like pitch five segments, like five sketches or celeb based games or whatever. And so I did that and I sent it in. And, cause I normally write for scripted stuff with my wife, but for this, because of late night, it's hard to have a team because it's so like, it just doesn't quite work in the vibe having two of you, because everyone's kind of on their own pitching stuff when you were in the room or on your computer. So having two of you wouldn't really work. But so I was like, oh, I'm just going to do this, because when I first moved here, I was like, I'd love to be part of that, because obviously Corden's British and not that all Brits have the same sense of humor, but I like his sort of upbeat outlook on life. He's very optimistic. And so I wrote the packet, didn't hear anything for ages. And then I get an email from Ian and Lauren, the head writers, went to see them. And then I straight away got put in a room with the two executive producers who we got on with. And Ben was watching an Arsenal game on the TV, and that's my team. So I was like, I'm missing this game to be at this interview. So we bonded well. And then I met James a week after, and we got on really well, just talked a lot about football, soccer, which, and the UK and US. And yeah, I think we got on well enough because of the, we optimistic Brits is how that came up in the interview. And yeah, then I got to be on the show. It was really fun to be on it. When I moved here, I was like, I'd love to be part of that. So I feel really honored that I got to be part of it for even just one season.
Would you ever consider writing for other late night shows? I know you've written for other things in the past, but is that something that interests you? Or
Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, you're fine. Or is it just mostly you focusing on your stand-up career and keeping that going?
No, I mean, it's. I always think there's so many interesting things. Everything you do in this industry is, I always like to try everything, because it's like, if you look at my CV, it's like I do stand-up, I've acted a little bit. I do voice stuff. I've written for a scripted show, like sold scripted shows, and then writing on late night, which just isn't really a format in the UK, but it's so good because you get to use muscle, like brain muscles. You don't always, so you get to writing monologue. I don't really do like in my stand up, I don't really do like topical jokes when it's me on stage. But I was like, oh, this is a fun discipline to like every day. You're just like, it's such a good muscle. So I really enjoyed it and I'd be open to doing it again. But I also love scripted stuff, like narrative stuff. I enjoy character based comedy. You know what I mean? Like my favorite shows are like have really strong characters. So being able to write the jokes from the show and pitch like fun, silly, big ideas is a great muscle that can then be moved into scripted writing as well, because you just brain can go, what if this happened? But what I liked about late night is you go, what about this? And then like, it could be on TV a week later. Whereas when you write for narrative stuff is a lot of notes and rewrites and notes and then rewrites. And then it might not ever see the light of day. Whereas you still pitch loads of stuff that doesn't see the light of day for late night. But some of it gets to go on, and that's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine the first time you write something, pitch it, and it goes up on air, has to be like a thrilling experience, because that's like instant validation, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, even like the first monologue joke that he said, I was like, ah, cool. I wrote that one. It went on. It's kind of a fun feeling. So, it's like a really different, because stand up, you just think of stuff and then you say it, which is in its own way amazing. There's no filter process.
Right.
But then when you see somebody else say a joke you wrote, or a sketch you came up with comes to life, then you're like, oh, that's so cool. It's like I can't really describe it. It's just, it's all that fun. It's like a fun endorphin rush. It's why I love this business. It's like you get to do with something you love, and it kind of, yeah, you create stuff that you never thought you'd be able to do when you started out. So it's great.
Yeah, I think that's very cool. Well, I want to ask you about your podcast. I know you've had a couple in mm-hmm. the past. What are you currently working on in that realm, and what is the show about?
Which one? So the moment, I've done a few, like I used to do one for years with my old friend. It's still a very good friend, Carl Donnelly. It was just like two of us talking, and it was really fun. It was one of those original, like no real point to it, like podcasts for like 10
those
years.
Those are the best, I think.
I know, but we did it for 10 years. And then when I moved here, it was weird. I moved here and then it became difficult to do it because we always had a guest and doing a guest. And then back then, even though it was only a few years ago, like Skype wasn't as good for doing it. And now Zoom has become, like we're doing this right now, it's become so much easier. But so we sort of took a pause from that. And I loved doing it at the time, but I think I crave a bit of structure in, maybe that's from writing more for TV. Like there'd be sort of a point to what you're doing. So Since then I've done a few little ones. I did one with my wife recently. This is very like a mini podcast where we just talked about like things that make life more enjoyable, called Absolute Game Changer. But, then we had a baby, and then that's become having a baby. I don't know if you have any kids. It's
I have a 9-year-old, so I get it.
Well, you know, it's just like, how do I do anything right? It's partly the new mentality, but that was really fun to do. But the one I really liked doing was a couple of seasons of one called Getting My Dad to Say I Love You, where I talked to comics about their parents and whether they said they loved them and the sort of and why we are the way we are. And that was really fun. But it's just the doing a podcast is fun, but it does take time, and it's hard to do it with trying to get guests and everything. So
it's a grind. People don't realize it.
Yeah, people think you can just put it on the internet. It's like you have to get guests, you have to lock a time in. It's hard. And I love doing it. If I it's something I want to, like that theme though is something I like. I it's even if I'm not doing it right now, it's like on pause. I think it's I realized about myself, I find the sort of dad son dynamic so fascinating that I kind of want that to live on in, whether that's in scripts I write or podcasts or what I talk about on stage. I think it's just an interesting, it's something that I'm very interested in. I realized about myself when doing the podcast. So they're great for that in one way. Even if you don't continue to do it every week or whatever, you're like, oh, it's such an interesting way of creating, and it can spark other stuff.
I mean, that's how I started, was talking about being a single dad. And then somehow in a weird way, it evolved into this. I don't know how, honestly. Like I go back and look at my catalog and I'm like, how did I wind up doing this? And then the strike hit and we started talking to tons of comedians. And now that's mostly kind of, I don't know. We have a mix of different things, but yeah.
Right. I mean, sorry. Can I just say, you're being a single dad? That is, mate, you are. I mean, being a dad with just the two of us, because we have no grandparents here because we live far away. I was like, it's so hard, two and one. So being a single dad, you are a superhero, mate. That is tough.
Well, I try. Well, I have help, but yeah.
I mean, you have to have some help. If you don't have any help, you can't like earn money and raise a human at the same time.
No, it's a very challenging thing, but I'm very thankful. That's very rewarding, and it's the best. I wanted to ask, so now you've done the albums, you've written, you've done a few things. Is there one lane, Chris, in particular that you want to focus on now, or is it just experimental with continuing to write scripts, do stand up, partner with your wife? Focus?
It's funny, I don't know if this is my personality, whenever I do like so much of one, I'm then excited for a bit of the other. So like, you know, when we're writing on the Late Late Show is great, but you're like, it takes up a lot of your time. And then, so then when I'd get the odd time to go do some stand up in the evening, I'd be like, oh, this is so nice. I just get to just do like 50 minutes of my own jokes. And then, you know, but when you're not doing the Late Late Show, then you're like, oh, it'd be cool to just like have a fun TV writing job where I get like lunch and stuff. and you get the camaraderie of like bouncing off ideas of people and being in a fun space. So yeah, I think my philosophy is like, there's definitely things I love. And like I said, like I feel like I love stand up and I love acting as well. When I get to do that now and again, I'm lucky in one way. I like a lot of elements of the business. But really I think I'd love to create my own show is one thing that's something I'd love to do. And so it's something about figuring out the whole world of something. You kind of feel like God.
I love it. Yeah. It's that creative gene that people have that really like, and if you can parlay it into a career, even better, like you've done. I think that's everybody's dream, is to parlay it into a career where you can just do this or maybe different versions of that, this, and make it a good living off of it. And I think that's what inspires people. But as you said, to your point, people don't realize, like for me, it's a one-man show. I mean, I get so many emails every day about this and that, and I've gotten very particularly picky lately because it just takes up so much time and I don't like to do stuff when I have my kid. And so like, I have to figure it out. So congrats on all your success, for real.
I have no, thank you. That's very nice of you to say. It's very sweet. But it's very, I don't know. No free time is the one thing that like, I like to be busy I guess it probably sounds that way with liking to do all these different things, but really with a kid in the mix now is like, I was saying to my wife last night, it was like, I didn't even really want to watch TV. I'm like, I don't even have the energy to concentrate on following a story. Just so funny because I love watching good TV normally, but it's like, yeah, you just don't get a minute. So even stuff like this is nice actually, because this is like,
yeah, this is probably the most fun thing. Yeah, like I started rewatching a show last night that I started years, The Walking Dead, and
oh yeah,
I kind of felt like I wanted to get into it again. I made it in a few seasons, but so much has happened, and now they're bringing back old characters for new shows. So I'm like, yeah, but even watching that, I just kind of found myself going, man, I forgot how intense this show is and how much effort it takes to like commit to a show. But sitting down, talking to you, other great people is far more enjoyable, I think. If I could do this all day, I certainly would.
Oh, that'd be great. Ken, do you want to hear a fun Walking Dead fact that will be relevant? I am filming this from inside Pollyanna McIntosh's old apartment, and she is, I forget the name of her character. She's the tall one. Do you know if she came in season? Oh, crap. What was her character? How far have you watched it? What season have you got to?
Oh, I'm just barely getting into season one.
All right. Well, anyway, in season, because I think we watched it till she came in and, like season 7 or 8, she's a very tall character who I think is like, I forget, she's like the head of the leader of some people that live in like a scrapyard. That's all I remember. She's very good. Anyway, she's friends with my wife. And then she used to live in this apartment. She moved out and we moved in. So yeah, enjoy. When you get there, mate, in like 9 years, when you get to that season,
I know,
it's, you'll think of this apartment with the greenery and the Nicolas Cage pillow and then some other just clothes I haven't thrown out because I've got no space.
That's awesome. Well, the album is Above Ground Comedian, Blonde Medicine. Yes. And it can be streamed everywhere.
Stream it wherever. Above Ground Comedian on all the places, wherever you get your music from, I guess.
Chris, thanks for hanging out, man. I appreciate it.
Dude, thank you so much. It's really nice to meet you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening and being a part of today's conversation.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed today's episode, please consider sharing it with a friend. It's absolutely free.
Omega proportions.
The views and opinions of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of the host.
And remember, we care.